Hello and welcome to a truly special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe and it's my delight to welcome you on behalf of my co-host Emeka Onyeagwa, who will be joining us momentarily. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about issues Nigeriana. I just came back about a week and a half ago from Nigeria. So we'll talk about what I saw, what my experience was in the country. We're also going to be talking about Nigeria's unfortunate defeat at the hands of the Ivorians in the AFCON finals. As I said, it's a special episode. It's been a while since my co-host and I were in the same room. I'm here at his home where we're doing this recording, and it's a delight to welcome all of you. Thanks.
This is the test. This is the second take, because when you don't do something in a while, lesson to us and every other person, is that you lose some basic functions. So one of the basic functions is pressing record.
Yes.
Certain devices.
So. Yeah. It's been quite a while since we were in the same space. For more than a year, I think we've been doing from two separate locations, I in my home, in my library, and you from your home, which is where we are at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're talking about, you've gone to Nigeria, you've gone to Nigeria again, and your bittersweet moments and experiences.
Yeah, so I was saying that Nigeria is sort of the place where I'm happiest. And I'm sure that those who are longtime listeners to this podcast will know that. So Nigeria is a place in the world, the one place in the world where I have the most profound sense of happiness. Paradoxically, it's also the place where I'm most profoundly sad. I'm happy just to be in the presence, in the company of relatives and friends, and I'm very fortunate to have quite a few of them. But then you look at the country, and each time you go into Nigeria, there's a certain stubbornness to the hope that things are working out better in that country in terms of our infrastructure, in terms of our public institutions, in terms of the ethical values that are positive and sustain a healthy society. Each time that one goes to Nigeria, you find the opposite. You find great devaluation of ethical outlook. You find another dimension of corruption, a deeper commitment to primordial values, to ethnic and religious sentiments over rational rational values and so on. You find a level of inefficiency and of just absolute disaster when you look at basic infrastructure, I'll be happy to get into examples in a minute.
Oh, okay. I mean, if you want to, we're talking about it just in terms of you go there and, the social cultural constructs, which, is a lot more complex that people don't tend to look into in Nigeria for numerous reasons, that you migrate, or you are not even, in some cases, you're supposed to be connected to somewhere, say you're Igbo, for instance, or you're some other ethnic group, and you have an affinity to to go home from time to time, whatever time it might be. Your social construct is different from your ethnic construct in a lot of cases, but you do in most cases want to identify with that ethnic construct. But in cases like yours, and again, maybe I'm going over a little bit too quick. But in cases like yours, you actually, you are identifying with someone you grew up in. So you're seeing people you actually grew up with. Mm-hmm. You're at that stage where you're talking about, okay, you know, different. I mean, you're always talking about something, right? I mean, at this stage, yeah, maybe more people might be talking about their kids and grandkids, possibly, or some people are people at your age, you know, having new wives and new kids. Right, so that's the conversation you're sitting there, you're having with all, and it's interesting to, but it's also profoundly sad because, especially with the ones that might be having new wives and new, whatever they might be having, or whatever situation they are in, a lot of people are struggling.
Yes,
and there's only so much you can extend your well. Should some people? Everybody's different. Like you should have. I mean, that's the big, you know, you should have, your purpose is different. Some people believe in extending themselves and making sure other people have to do other things. So everybody's different, not to, but there's only so much you can help, irrespective of your resources and other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think that in a side conversation before we started the recording, I was saying how, each time I return to Nigeria, I notice a deeper level of poverty, and I notice that poverty at a structural level is deepening as well. And I come from a family where my parents set an example of giving to the less fortunate. We never had much money growing up. To illustrate this, I tell people that when I was growing up, apart from festivities like Christmas, Easter, New Yam Festival, and so on, or the odd birthday, then I never remember the moment where I ate enough. I ate to my fill. And so my mom would always say to us, have five children, you know, have you had enough? And at least my answer was always no, ma. My mom would say, go and drink water, drink more water. And yet my parents, even though they had very little, they always invited other relatives. They invited poorer people to come and take food, to come and eat at our home. There was a time when that really upset me because I said, hey, how come people are coming in to get the food when I'm not having enough of it? But what ended up happening was that because of this kind of orientation that our parents gave us, that my four siblings and I developed that passion for helping less fortunate people. And so we are home. A lot of poor people, once they hear, they come and they expect you to dole out some money, and one tries, you see. But unless you are a Dangote or an Otedola or say an Alto Eze or Obi Kubana, you know, you don't have enough. You know, you don't have enough because contrary to the fable that a lot of people believe in Nigeria and elsewhere, money, the dollar doesn't actually fall from the tree, doesn't grow on trees as well. And so whatever one has, unless you are involved in some kind of crime and allergic to criminal activity, you know, one's resources are necessarily limited. And yet, so part of the frustration that I feel when I'm in Nigeria is that I would like to help everybody who comes with a story. And there are people who come looking for help to pay school fees, people who look for help for hospitalization, to buy medication. But at the very basic level, it is that people are looking to eat. And forget what we call square meal. People are looking to eat, period. They don't care whether the meal is rectangular or round or square or whatever, just a meal. And a lot of Nigerians can't find it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the other side to it is people that might not understand might, would say, well, look, there's no society in recorded history where you don't have that kind of scenario where people, there are people around somewhere, you know, not maybe not far away, not definitely not far away from here, that mm-hmm. are looking for a meal as well. So it's a lot much more difficult for some people to understand that reality of it's if you're in America, yes, you have people who, or in the UK, you have people who need, mm-hmm. they need all kinds of things. They need food,
oh yeah,
they need shelter, they need water. Mm-hmm. It's just in America, the poorer people are likely to have more means of at least getting by.
A social safety net of some sort.
Some sort, right? In Nigeria, your only social safety net is likely going to be Good Samaritans. Mm-hmm. They may or may not be related to you. Mm-hmm. Or some, you know, you're going to resort to something.
Mm-hmm. And when the government plays any role at all, right, is what they call palliatives, yes. right? And we saw it during COVID, when there was a global lockdown, right? So some societies sent a check to their citizens to help them get by. It wasn't ever enough, right? But in Nigeria, you found families of 12 and they got a loaf of bread and a small bag of rice. There was no oil, no tomato, just, you know, a very puny, miserable bag of rice, right? If they were lucky. A lot of them just got, there were sometimes more than a dozen people, and they would be thrown a loaf of bread that really one person could finish, you know? So when you have that level of disorganization, and I mean, of course, in Nigeria, nobody even knows who a citizen is, right? Hmm. We don't have any reliable census. We don't have any way of determining that anybody you see at any given time is truly a Nigerian, right? The government doesn't have a record, data of any sort that is reliable. And so even the very process, even if the government had the means or the mindset to help citizens, there are all kinds of residual problems that are there that stand in the way. And of course, we know about the Nigerian minister who was in charge of facilitating this thing that they call palliatives and so on. And she was caught really paying public funds into her private bank account. And all of this was happening as I was in Nigeria, and she was suspended. But we haven't heard anything about that, you know, which is typical of Nigeria, that something like that happens and the government will swear that they're investigating this, but the person is going around partying with their ill-gotten wealth.
Yeah, I mean, on a micro level, if you're picking up cases, you could take a look at all those things. Realistically, I mean, it's not to belabor the point. It's just hard for people to understand it's called multidimensional poverty in Nigeria. It's really hard for people to understand that reality. Different data, different censuses. We'll talk about football game mm-hmm. yesterday. You know, DSTV was talking about subscribers and how South Africa, that is maybe about a quarter of the size of Nigeria, maybe a little bit more than that. Mm-hmm. South Africa has way more purchasing power, so it's not, you know, being this thing. It's the middle class who has always been tiny in Nigeria and has almost completely disappeared. So it's a lot on a macro level, it's a lot harder. But micro level, it's a lot. You could pick all these examples are bound. You could just. It's a lot, it's too many to, you know, even sometimes shine a spotlight on. Mm-hmm. On a macro level, you talk about it, and it seems like the best people are hoping for is that an economy run on palliatives.
Yeah.
You can't run an economy on palliatives. You can't, on people even hoping. It's not that they even get it. Mm-hmm. You can't run an economy. You're either trying to run a real country, creates well-being, irrespective of, it depends on what economic philosophy you ascribe to and implement. It's one thing to ascribe to, it's another thing to implement what you ascribe to. And it's when you sit down, it's a question of, okay, so when you ascribe to, how do you want to implement that policy? The essential policy of Nigeria is there's a national kick.
Absolutely.
And you share a national kick. Mm-hmm. And this national kick is, in literally, it's finite. Mm-hmm. So there's very little wealth being created by, in the country.
By definition, a kick is finite.
Yeah.
You know, so you can have an expansive, elastic kick, right?
Yep.
And this issue was actually sort of dramatized for me as a writer, as a student of literature. So years ago, when I first read Achebe's novel "No Longer at Ease," where you have Obi Okonkwo, the grandson of Okonkwo of Things Fall Apart, and he's been caught in a bribe scheme. You know, he's works for the scholarship department, and he's owing to a series of economic financial difficulties, is taken to accepting bribe from people who are looking to get scholarships from the government. So he's arrested and he's undergoing trial, and the Umuofia Progressive Union holds a meeting. And part of what they say, an elder says, is that we're strangers in this town, meaning Lagos. And he says, if good comes to the land, let us get our own share. But if bad comes to it, let it go to the owners of the land who know which gods to appease. So that sort of gives you that sense, that conception that Nigeria is a cake, right? Nigeria is food. And Nigerians, all we let us get our own share, which you find that whenever a governor or a president visits a local government area, a community, or the president visits a state, inevitably in the address that is read of welcome this visiting political dignitary, people will say, we haven't had our own fair share of the state cake, of the national cake. And so that conception that a nation has a cake, not one that we are baking, but one we should be eating, accounts for the fact that Nigeria, which has great potential to be a robust, productive economy, is one where its central feature is conspicuous consumption.
Yeah.
Everybody is trying to consume as much as they can.
Yeah, it's a Nigerian version of it. So if you were in America and you were talking about the version, or in the UK or wherever, the reality of it, which people don't tend to realize, is when people talk about equality of outcome.
Yeah.
So outcome is always finite. Mm-hmm. And if... And in the in these theory of this individual, this human, these people, whoever they might be, is that if the outcome is not equal to the outcome of the population, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
Because it's finite and everybody must have, no matter the industry or the segment or whatever it is, everybody must have a share of this outcome. That's the Western version. In Nigeria, is that there's a kick. So people are also not coming to say, hey, I need opportunities. Or they're not trained that way as well, to be fair to a lot of people. They're not trained to understand, hey, I need opportunities. I need an opportunity. I understand the government resources are limited. Or if they're talking to an individual, it's like, hey, I understand your resources are limited. And the fact that you care also shows that your resources are definitely limited. Because the less you care, the more your resources will start growing up, in my opinion. But I'm talking of everybody, not anybody in particular, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't come to you and say, hey, how can I, or in Igbo parlance, they'll say, can you set me up? Mm-hmm. When I say set me up, it's not like a bad thing. Like, I'm going to set me up to kill me, right? It's like, can you come bam boy? Or, you know, come bam, can I be your boy? Can I study from you? Yes. Translate it properly.
So can I be an apprentice
of some sort? Can you assist me in growing myself? Mm-hmm. People generally don't want to. I mean, obviously you have pockets here and there. You have entrepreneurship systems here and there that people want to look for a way to create wealth. Mm-hmm. But the Nigerian state in itself inherently is anti-creation of anything. That's dividing that cake.
Yeah, that's a tragedy. So not only are we not, because to want to eat cake or a bar or inyo or whatever is not bad. In fact, it is good. which is part of what I love when I'm in Nigeria, because food and drinks are the two things that Nigerians still do very well. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you are in Nigeria, because nothing else works. You know, it's not like people can go out to a park. It's not like people can take walks. So when you visit somebody, it's food. And if you don't eat, even if you've just eaten before you arrive, they say, you have not eaten here. You must eat some. And so we do food well, at least those who still have the resources to provide food. Food is not bad. What is bad is the absolute neglect of the function of regrowing, reproducing the food, okay? So if we use the cake metaphor, yes, let's eat the cake by all means, but let us be baking the cake as well, okay? And part of what you find in Nigeria is that Nigerians are very industrious. Nigerians are actually very enterprising, which is why when Tinubu took over and removed the oil subsidy and the liter price of fuel quadrupled, for the first week or two, Nigerians noticed that there was considerable reduction in traffic. People just said, hey, it's costing too much. I can't go out there. But you go to Nigeria today, everybody's back on the road because somehow Nigerians find a way to adjust. You know, so it's as if the price of fuel never went up. So whether it's that they are begging more money from relatives who are abroad or relatives who are within Nigeria and are doing well, somehow people are back out driving. People are back out taking public transport, you know, almost as if the price hike did not happen. So it's to underscore the point that Nigerians are very enterprising. They can adjust. They're dynamic. But the government, not only is the government not creating what Nigerians call enabling environment, because that's what Nigerians need. If the government would do basic things, something as basic as maintaining security, something as basic as guaranteeing regular electricity, Nigerians would take it the rest of the way, because they have ideas, they are industrious, they have the staying power, and so on and so forth. But it's as if governments, to compound their visionlessness, to compound their inability to provide the environment for private enterprise to thrive, the government actually goes out of its way to place bottlenecks, you know. So I happened to be speaking whilst I was in Nigeria to somebody who was in government and worked in the trade and investment space under the Buhari regime administration. And he was telling me how he tried just to make Nigeria a more investment-friendly space, to remove bottlenecks, because civil servants, bureaucrats, make money. When you want to come and set up a business in Nigeria, they create all these bottlenecks. So you have to see them. They will say, oh, you have to pay so much, and it's too much, so you have to give them a bribe, okay, in lieu of paying a smaller fee to the government, or in lieu of the government just saying, you're going to create jobs, you're going to bring productivity to our economy. So we are going to just make it as easy as possible for you to set up. There are all these bottlenecks, this guy was telling me, and he tried to remove them, and vested interests would not let him. Because the Nigerian state, the people who run it, make money by creating problems. In other spaces, people make money by solving problems. See, that's the key difference. That in a place like the United States, right?
Providing solutions.
Every state governor says, how can I attract a business? Let's say the governor of New York will say, there are a lot of businesses that are headquartered in North Carolina. I want some of them to come to New York. So they use the tax structure. They use all kinds of enticement, okay, to say, hey, if you come here, we're going to give you so much money. We're going to help you with, you know, give you some facility to build your headquarters and so on and so forth. We're going to waive taxes for some number of years. You create that kind of environment and people bring businesses. In Nigeria, the governor will say, take your business somewhere. Mm-hmm. If you want to be in my state, come and see me.
Yeah.
And come and see me is give me maybe a huge cut of the equity in your company. And who wants to do that?
Mm. Yeah, it's part of just the reality of Nigeria. Just can go on these examples, these little examples here and there in terms of just how things work on a daily basis, not just equity in a company, but people don't really want much done. There's a limit to what people really want to change, because they profit from things that way. Mm-hmm. Things generally just stay the same, which in essence just keeps getting worse, yeah, as it has right from pre-independence. So to even say that, you know, they just want that. And I was saying, yeah, the thing that disturbs me is just the sadness of, you know, so I mean, I think a lot of people's lives are going, you come back, you see them, yeah, a lot of them are still there. Some are doing great things, but that's a whole other conversation in terms of why do those things happen? On a governmental level, you can understand that. Mm-hmm. But in reality, you can also say, hey, you know what the government is. Do you believe in personal choice? And, you know, all that stuff. It's all this thing. It's sad to see. It's just sad to see a lot of lives. Mm-hmm. I was talking the other day about, I said, you know, there's a cliche we always use. Ah, this person was so talented as a child.
Yes.
Like, I know it's a cliche, but in all honesty, and we're talking about, there's a one of my classmates that, I think it was, he ended up being a year my junior, but he is a world famous producer, which most people would know. And then I was just talking about, I was like, yeah, he was talented in terms of he was dedicated and just that guy that would just be in school and be a drummer, and now he's now a world famous producer. But I'm like, there were plenty of other very talented individuals.
That's right.
So many of them. I'm like, I know it's a cliche. I'm not trying to minimize or become a reductionist in terms of his impacts globally. But I'm just being honest that there were a lot of other people who, some never succeeded, some tried to get off the ground, some did. They were not consistent. I could call a whole bunch of names. While I was talking about it, now came into my head, and I went in and looked at for a couple of guys that were very popular then, are no longer popular now. And I used to like, there was a rapper called 6 Foot Plus. He had a song called I'm Only. There was another guy, Too Short, had songs that were very hilarious. And I don't know their individual circumstances. I just know they were not consistent in what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole. But anyway, it's just in Nigeria, I would assume, and I would believe that that's a very normal thing, mm-hmm, that happens.
Yeah.
Whether it's the mindset or the circumstances, whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. But it's sad to see that there's not a drive to reform society, to value certain things within society, and you know that. But anyway,
yeah.
It's not to dwell on sadness. Maybe we should talk about the game yesterday.
Well, but yeah, I think we should. But before we get there, because I also think in a moment I'll speak to my sense of it, that the way the game was played spoke, for me at any rate, to what I consider a particular malady of Nigeria. But let me get to it in a moment.
Right.
But the point that I wanted to speak to is your point of so many people having been perceived as having great promise in Nigeria, and then they sort of vanish, you know, that promise evaporates. And I'd like to suggest again that the Nigerian space is hugely inhospitable, hugely unfriendly to the development, to the flowering, sustenance of talent. Okay? You look at our schools, the quality of our schools. I bet that when I went to secondary school, I had a much better, especially if you went to public secondary schools as opposed to private ones, that I had a much better educational system and standards than when you went. And those who are going today, it's a joke.
Yeah.
Some of the teachers would not qualify to be students mm-hmm. in the classes that they are teaching. And that's because over the years, we've allowed a system of corruption to creep into the educational system, right? Where you have what they call sorting, see? Sorting simply means that students offer money to their teachers, including all the way to university level, in exchange for grades. So some female students will offer their bodies. Female and male students will offer money, and so on. And so it's become, from something that was on the margins, if you like, which we heard about almost as, you know, this is myth, it's become now so established that I was speaking with a relative. And this relative told me that a lot of parents say how their own children who are in university and polytechnics in Nigeria will come home during exams to take money from their parents to settle, to sort out their lecturers, their professors, and so on for grades. So you find that we're producing engineers who are not engineers, who don't know the most basic things about engineering. We're producing accountants who, again, the experience of a friend of mine who was setting up a business in Nigeria from America, and he told me how he interviewed dozens of accounting graduates to hire an accountant. And he said they didn't know the most basic thing, okay, about balance sheet, you know, and that he was shocked. As an author, I know that my Nigerian publisher, the book I did on Wole Soyinka, that the book was proofread by somebody who is supposed to be a graduate in English, and there were hundreds of mistakes that this person did not catch. So I had to proofread my own book 6 times.
Wow.
Each time, and sometimes I'll make corrections and it will go back. And in the process of correcting it, more mistakes will be inserted in my text. So if I wasn't there to read the thing, it would be a mess. You'll be embarrassed at what the product. And yet people who have graduated from Nigerian schools are doing the job. But a lot of them have degrees which they have not earned, degrees which they cannot, which do not validate any level of learning. So we have created that kind of society where the children of privileged parents can buy their way through universities come up with the best degrees, not because they've earned it, but because they paid for it. You know, I wrote a column years ago called Sexually Transmitted Degrees. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about this idea of teachers who poach their female students, male teachers mostly. But today it's so pervasive, unfortunately, in the system that so many people participate in this, and it's as if the odd student who refuses to participate or the odd lecturer who says, nope, I cannot participate in this, becomes really, you become an object of mockery almost. And then you look, why is it that more and more people are doing this? Look at what has happened just last year after Tinubu was inaugurated president. Immediately, the price of fuel, as I said, quadrupled. Then the price of the dollar, okay, which was hovering around 600 and something to 700. As of last week, I understand that it hit actually 1,700 before it came back to 1,500. Mm-hmm. So lecturers who were counting on a certain level of income, suddenly in an economy where most of what is desired by the middle class is imported, found that they are really paupers. You know, so you find that, you know, people then have to cut corners if they are going to buy food. You know, I have a friend in my hometown who had a lot of means and had two generators, but suddenly he said to me that he couldn't afford the fuel to run his generators, so he had to cough up some money to put in solar power. But the solar power cannot power a lot of the equipment in the house, so it's just basic light and his fan. You know, it says at least let the fan be blowing. It cannot take the air conditioning. It cannot take some of the big refrigerators and so on. So people are really finding every day that, or let me tell one more story. So I was in Nigeria, as you know, mm-hmm. last October, right? I spent 3 weeks in Nigeria last October, and I stayed with a relative in Lagos, in Antony Village, and I enjoyed between 20 and 22 hours of electricity every day. I returned in January, and the same relative says, oh, things are now so bad that in a day, sometimes they have only 4 to 6 hours of electricity. So you say, what is it that accounts for that progress is never sustained in Nigeria? So when they got to 20 to 22 hours of power, okay, I was saying, oh, maybe when next I come, it will be 24 hours. It will be regular, uninterrupted power. I come in and it's falling dramatically and drastically. So that's the kind of unfortunate pathological development that we find in Nigeria.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. It is part of a distant Nigerian economy runs, I think. Well, I don't know what the current stats is. The foreign direct investment is essentially remittances. So I think the stats is, 25% of the economy mm-hmm. runs on remittances. So people are sending more. People are disturbed more. People are finding different ways to cope. Personally, I just have my phone on. Times you can reach me at times. I have stuff to do. I can't. They call you to come and pick up your brother in on the streets of New York, crazy or homeless or something. How does that help anybody? So, yeah. But everybody, people have different ways to understand. But foreign direct investments is essentially people from overseas coming in, some buying properties or whatever. So, mm-hmm. but anyway, I was just going to add that just as an addendum.
But talking about that, because Nigerians who live in what we call the diaspora, mostly in Asia, Europe, and and North America, because they are such a big and burgeoning part of the Nigerian economy, sustaining the economy, sustaining people's survival day to day, I think is a big injustice that they don't have, that the Nigerian state has not had the vision, the imagination, the way to extend the vote to them. Not that this will mean much, especially in a country where voting is still simply a system for rigging elections. But I just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, you can pick up the micro issues, and I can make a list of them to last 500 lifetimes, in my opinion. Realities are just bigger. If anybody ever wanted to tackle them, but I think Nigeria just doesn't, less and less wants to tackle them. This ends into all kinds of chaos.
So, how did you see yesterday's game, Nigeria versus Cote d'Ivoire?
Yeah, I watched it.
I know you watched it, yeah. And so did I, but I'll tell you my own story in a minute.
Yeah, I watched it. I was out. My in-laws, my uncle, my queen's whole family, and he and I sat down in the basement, and, you know, he's been here too long, but I think he came here in 72. So we just, you know, sat down in the basement, chilled. Been married a long time, wife, kids, everybody, they were all upstairs. And, you know, we just sat down to watch it. It showed me that even somebody like him, I don't think he has ever built or bought a house in Nigeria. I know he's renovating their father's house in the village, by the way. But he goes, he just likes to go, peacefully come back. He's been here a long time, been a doctor a long time, all that stuff. He has one child. Doesn't really, just giving you a little bit of a background. Just to say, hey, even he was kind of like, I saw a level of patriotism in him, some degree. Mm-hmm. He wanted to watch the game and wanted to support Nigeria. And both of us sat down, opened a bottle of wine, opened a little Moscato, a lot of details, I guess. Just chilling and watching
important details, yeah. Man must leave, as they say.
We're eating some Spanish food, palata, that's like a version of a similar dish to jollof rice, a Spanish version. It made it a lot easier. I wanted to watch. I also feel like Nigerians, I have this feeling, and for the last 10 years, I have this opinion, even a feeling, an opinion. Which I think is well-sourced. Nigerians put all their problems into sports, specifically football or soccer, as they call it in America. Mm-hmm. And they put their entire distance. It's similar to when they catch a thief in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. They put all their anger into that thief and set that person on fire. Or if somebody says to some degree that you insulted their prophets, they take you and they set you on, that kind of thing. They put all their frustrations in their society, which they don't tend to realize. In today's parlance, we might call it, there's trauma involved. So I think there's trauma involved for Nigerians watching football, soccer, and they go online and they use the opportunity to be so loud and boisterous and insult everybody, insult every country, insult it, and tell you that finally this is what we're better than you at when they're succeeding. So they go to watch the game and already get this, there's this divisive feeling. Peter Obi goes there and people are happy to see him there, which he has always gone for these tournaments. You go back, even before he became a governor, he's always been this thing, and people turn into something. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't go. And the current occupants of the highest offices in the land, they send their people there. They go, last game was a draw. This game was going to take place. So this just set the background to, I'm just sitting down, eating my palata rice and drinking my Moscato, feeling like, something is bound to not end up right in this game. And I don't think it was just, if this is my own humble opinion, a lot of people are like, they didn't put in their efforts. Spoiler, obviously they lost, but they had one shot on goal, very little possession. They didn't seem to want to play. Very different if you had watched them earlier in the tournament, which I did prior to the last two games, especially this particular game. But they didn't seem to want to put their energy there. So I watched that game, saw the first half, saw the zeal in my wife's uncle and my uncle-in-law. And these guys are not serious. We talk when we live overseas and we're not really connected to any much. I mean, he's connected, but just the day-to-day realities. And, he's like, these guys don't want to, guys in Nigeria, same thing. These guys don't want to play, different solutions. This one's a Nigerian zone. Let's go get young boys again. We need the young boys on the streets that want, kind of thing. Frustration. So that was why I saw it. It was a bunch of people who I felt probably had a cloud, in my opinion, hanging over their heads in many ways. Maybe some of them also, if they had been left alone to me to just play ball, then what was beginning to happen, where the people occupying the office in, of the day started claiming some special thing about the, about, you know, their government impoverishing everybody else, but somehow, some ways, is able to win soccer tournaments. And people are reminding them, rightly so, thankfully, that people remember that under Abacha, Nigeria won in 94. Mm-hmm. Under the so-called Jonathan, that was supposed to be terrible, they won in 2013. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I watched it, saw a bunch of people who, some put in their efforts there, some people blame the coach. I just think, they had some level of, in my humble opinion, some level of mental block. They just were not there. They were not physically present. So,
well, again, I like the background that you gave. let me give a different kind of background. I've lived in America for about 35 years now. This December will be 35 years. So I've lived longer in America than I did in Nigeria, say. And I used to be a football, in other words, a soccer fanatic when I lived in Nigeria, until football nearly took my life. Wow. So I had gone to the stadium in Lagos, through Lere, for an international match. It was between the Green Eagles, who became the Super Eagles, and a North African team from North Africa, either Egypt or Algeria or something. And I arrived at the stadium, and the stadium was packed. And a lot of people, Nigerians, had squeezed them their way through, hoping to find that seat that nobody else had found. They went and saw that there was no such seat, so they were trying to come out. But there were thousands of us trying to go in. And I was in this wave trying to go in, and the people who had gone in were trying to come out because there were no seats. And so suddenly in this heave of bodies, I got caught so much that I was being squeezed so much that in desperation, I lifted one leg and I couldn't find a way to put it back down because that's how crushing it was. So I was being moved by the strength, by the energy of the crowd in different directions. And in desperation, I raised the other leg. So I was now hanging off the air, being pushed back, being pushed forward all sides. And I was howling the seat of my pants, you know, grab me. Nice. And I held on to something. And the man spread out his legs and he said, kneel down in front of me. So I knelt down between his legs. And I had seen my death that day, that throughout the match, I refused to watch because I said, I might as well have been dead. Wow. So I just looked down. I didn't watch anything that happened in the game. I just wanted the game to end so that I'll go home. Mm-hmm. That was the last time I went to the stadium in Nigeria. Then I came to America and I went to watch Nigeria against Italy in Boston, the World Cup, right? And I was there when I think Yekini scored, and we had all kinds of hopes. But Nigeria often disappoints you in the big spots. You know, of course, we, as Achebe wrote in The Trouble with Nigeria, Nigeria is a country that finds ways to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, you know. So, that's one story. The other story is that my uncle, my father's youngest brother, died watching a Nigerian Eagles game.
Wow.
He died. So, his wife had given him food. He was eating and watching the game. Nigeria went up 1-0, just like what transpired in the Ivorian game. Nigeria was up 1-0. Then the wife came out. The other team had scored, making it 1-1. The wife brought him some more food, and then she came back. The man was not eating. She says to him, hey, why are you not eating? Are you ignoring your food? No answer. She said, are you sleeping? The other side has scored a winning goal, 2-1. And my uncle had a heart attack and died. Wow. So that tells you. So I wrote yesterday on Twitter and on Facebook.
This is your uncle or your mother's side?
On my father's side. Father's youngest brother, yeah. You know, who was the first in our lineage to go to university. He was the one who paid our school fees and so on, you know. So he was a special Uncle Linus, you know, my father's youngest brother. And so anytime I'm watching a soccer game or any other sport, if I become unusually invested in the game, I remember my uncle died watching this game, so I step away. So I saw the first half when I actually was trying to leave because, you know, I sort of noticed that the Nigerian team was playing in a way that I think corresponds with what I call the central problem of Nigeria, is that we want to be individual stars, but we don't work together as a team. So it was flashes of individual brilliance, but you can see the Ivorians playing football as it should be played. Football is a social game. You have teammates. You are not to carry the ball alone and go and score. So you saw the passing. Nigerians will do that and pass, and these people will take the ball again. I mean, they control, I think, the first half, they were in control 64%, right?
Yeah.
That was so one-sided. And it's like, again, Nigeria succeeds almost accidentally. So we had this accidental heading and we scored. That's the way we do it. We don't plan to succeed. We don't sit down and do the homework and say, okay, let's, you know, do this heavy lifting. Let's pass the ball, move incrementally, systematically, and then achieve our goals. You know, it's we, as they say in Nigeria, God is on our side, you know. So it's like when Nigerians play, there are 12 men on the field. God is our 12th man, you know. So we always believe God is there. Or we, you know, sometimes we will go to juju to make the juju whatever deity. The 12th.
I mean, in defense of Nigerians, I guess, you know, if you truly believe in a monotheistic God,
yes,
I think they have a belief in a polytheistic system.
Yes.
You know, so if you believe in a polytheistic God, your God, whichever God that is, is bound to be on your side, right?
You know, yeah, the thing is, you know, when I remember years ago, Nigeria was, in fact, when Nigeria played in Boston and so on. So I was talking to this Nigerian guy. He said, if God says we're going to win, we're going to win. So I said, why do you think that God will hate Italians and then love you? You know, why should God take an interest in a football game and then say, oh, these people, I want to win? You know what I mean? Ultimately, you play a good game. And sometimes you are proud of your effort, even if you lose, right?
Yeah.
I think that part of the tragedy, well, it's not quite tragedy, part of the sadness is that we couldn't say that the Nigerian team gave a good account of itself as a team, right? Again, there were flashes of brilliance. Anyway, so I saw the first half.
Mm-hmm.
The second half started. And quickly, you could see a renewed sense of purpose. The Ivorians had purpose in the first half, unlike Nigerians, who then became lucky to score. In the second half, the Ivorians came with a redoubled, renewed sense of purpose. It was clear to me that they would win the game. In fact, I thought, should I go and predict that Ivory Coast will win 2-1 or 3-1. I said, Nigerians are going to roast me, and you know Nigerians are unforgiving. Mm-hmm. They might actually say that it's Okendibe who caused them their defeat and so on. So I said, okay. But after the first few minutes, my heart was pounding in the wrong way of anxiety, knowing that our team was making so many mistakes. And I said, okay, I'm going to sit this one out. So I saw simply the highlights of the Ivorian goals after they had won, but I didn't see the.
Yeah. It is. It's a good way to see it. I mean, you see it that way. Yeah. Individualistic, you know, it's a euphemism. The only disagreement I would have is, you know, Nigeria has won that tournament and other tournaments before. So Nigeria does have Under certain circumstances, they do win.
Oh yeah. Oh no, we have a formidable team, but you have to also understand that I was in Nigeria when they played. I don't know if it is Cape Verde.
The first game was a draw. Okay. And people were insulting them.
Okay, no, it wasn't a draw. There was a team they beat 1-0. I forget which team this was.
The first game was a draw. The next two games they won.
Yes. Now this was an own goal by the other team.
Yeah.
You know, their players.
Beat Cameroon.
Yeah. No, it wasn't Cameroon. It wasn't Cameroon. It was a small country. And was it? I'm wondering if it is a Southern African country. It's not Mozambique. But anyway, I happened to visit a friend and the game was on.
Yeah.
Because I don't, as a rule, again, because of my uncle's experience and because of my near-death experience, football, when Nigeria is playing, reminds me of death. And, you know, so
about it. Yeah. What can I say?
So trauma, man. Yeah. Talk about trauma, right? And so I pretty much, and I came to America, and these bloody Americans, you know, turned my mind to what they call football, which I call handball. You know, I have this ongoing argument with Americans. I say it's handball by overweight men. Sometimes, you know, it's maybe American rugby. It is not football, guys. Football is when you kick it with your leg, you know. But anyway, I came to America and I became interested in basketball, in football, even a little bit of baseball, right? Mm. And then in tennis. So I'm a very odd Nigerian because I don't know, if you ask me to name for you five players who are playing in the European League or which team is leading, I don't know whether Chelsea is better than Arsenal, better than Manchester United or Manchester or Tottenham Hale. I have zero understanding of football in Europe or in Africa. I don't know the stars today because I sort of stopped paying attention. But yes, of course, Nigeria has done extraordinary things in the past. And at any rate, there's a point that I also want to make.
Yeah.
Because Nigeria, on the whole, does very little for those who represent it, especially those who represented it in the arena of sports. You know, we know of, is it Amokachi, you know, who had terrible injury. We know of players who died, who were stars when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, who died in abject penury, you know, even Christian Chukwu, right? There was a time he was in terrible shape and, you know, his pictures were being shown everywhere. And I remember growing up, Chairman Christian Chukwu was like a mini god. So the fact that Nigeria doesn't take care of his own, for me, also explains why I don't blame any player if they say, okay, I'm just going to do what I can. I'm not going to put myself out there. And it's not necessarily the money, it's also just how you show appreciation. Because Nigeria says, what have you done for me lately, right?
Mm-hmm.
This player has failed and suddenly people are dumping on them. But I don't think it's that they are to blame necessarily.
Yeah.
What kind of help did we give them as they were developing their talent? A lot of them did all the hard work. A lot of them played their hearts out and had contracts in Europe and so on. And they are insured. If they injure themselves, Nigeria will look the other way. It's not like people are going to say, hey, we're going to take care of you, you know.
Yeah.
The country hardly takes care of its own.
If you get injured for Nigeria, you might have to actually pay them in the NFF. Actually, funny enough, that might actually be the case. But, but yeah, I mean, most of the team are people that were born and brought up outside the country. Mm-hmm. They, you know, generally get the insults, I guess. It is a game. It is a game. People are different. I think I stopped paying attention, especially when I became an adult. I stopped living. I was living in Nigeria anymore. Well, I mean, I did go back and forth, but it just, the more you grow up and the more you live in a society like America, there's just too many things to do to bother about day to day about football. So for me, I just saw a bunch of people who were mentally fatigued. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything to it. I think watching the online discourse, mm-hmm. watching the amount of taunting Nigerians generally online, I'd estimate at least 85% of the Nigerians online engaged in mm-hmm. when the team was winning.
A taunting of all the African countries. Yes. That was yeah. terrible. My daughter was drawing my attention to some of it.
Again, I've got no problem with just general taunts.
Yeah.
But like I've said, it just reeked of somebody putting their entire... it reminds
investment,
me of,
yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of... I used to play... Anyway, there was a guy who played basketball. It's that dude. He just felt like he came to the basketball courts to relieve something from his childhood.
Yeah.
I just got tired of playing. But it just reminds me of... Anyway, so, you know, it's...
It reminds me of a story which is a meme, even in America, where a parent is boasting, oh, my child was student of the month and so on. And another parent whose child is not academically gifted said, oh, my child beat your son up, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, my child can now punch your child, you know.
Again, some of the banter was funny. I enjoyed people that enjoyed them. Some of them were genuinely funny, but a lot of them were just frustrated individuals getting into it. I was just like, well, understandable. It's always been the case. People will talk about this, that, but I've said, ever since my age, ever since I was whatever age to know anything, the destination for the majority of the people in my generation was to not exist in Nigeria. I went to secondary school. I finished at the end of the 90s, right? So people just wanted to not exist in Nigeria. Some of them have gone back, you know, like long stories, right? People have gone back. People have this, people have that. Mm-hmm. People have acquired the intellectual capacity and intellectual abilities and other things. They might have sought and gone back. Some have gone on to greater things and are still doing great things. Mm-hmm. Everybody's different, but it just felt like if you wanted to exist as a regular human being, there were a lot of things that people even then didn't want to get involved in. So there's a lot of frustration. That's to say that a lot of people sit down there and are frustrated, and football is that vehicle. They put their energy into
trash,
insult, and these are regular people. They're going, you know, you don't need to subject them to your political party stuff. Mm-hmm. I even felt the government shouldn't have been there, but personally, we'll get into it maybe next episode, mm-hmm. but there's just so much that has transpired and is still transpiring from the declaration of the winners and the way they've behaved. Mm-hmm. You know, I told somebody the other day, Yar'Adua at least, which is something you always point out, by the way, Yar'Adua at least came up and said, look, man, this election was just given to me, mm-hmm. you know, but I will walk.
Yes.
To improve
yes.
and end your confidence. Yes. And I know it is criminal, but please, you guys give me a chance. Can I mean, that's interpretation of it, right?
That's you know.
it's different sure from these guys.
Part of his argument was that, but if it had been clean, I would still have won. And said, that's actually a terrible, terrible argument. But
I think he sincerely believed it, though.
Yes.
I think he's sincerely
believed it. Yeah, he sincerely did believe it. Yeah.
So, you know, give or take, he's like, well, you know, hey, I understand the system is messed up and all, yada, yada, yada. Mm. But if it wasn't like that, man, trust me, I'm the guy.
Yes.
You could see that argument.
Yeah.
I wouldn't discount it. But if you could have, then why didn't you just do that, bro?
That's right.
wherever he is.
And that was what I told somebody who was one of his officials who approached me to sort of soften my stance on the government. And he said, oh, you know, in a free and fair election, it would have won. I said, that's actually more insulting. I said to him, the analogy I gave him was, if you and I are friends and I needed money from you and I know that you will give it to me, but then I go and steal it. And you said to me, why did you steal my money? And I said, I stole it because I knew that if I had asked you, you would have given it to me. So I stole it. I said, no, if I know you'll give it to me, I have a moral duty to ask. rather than steal it, right? I should only steal it if, A, I was very, very desperate. I'll die if I didn't have that money to eat. And I knew you would say no. Then I'll steal it. So the only way that Yar'Adua can justify, anybody can justify rigging an election, which is unjust, you know, there's no justification, right? But if you're going to rig, it should only be because you can't win otherwise. If you can win in a clean, credible election, then for you to rig shows a measure of contempt for the people who would have voted for you, that you say, I don't want your vote, I want to steal it, even though you give it to me.
Yeah, I can see that. That's a fair point. Yeah. That's a fair point. So,
and by the way, I don't think I've told you, but you know, you were talking about your classmates and much of your generation wanting to check out of the country. I stayed at the Marriott Hotel in Ikeja, and I ran into a guy who came up to me and said, do you do a podcast? I said, yes. He said, oh, you do it with Mecca? I said, yes. And he said he was your classmate in secondary school.
That's good.
So he gave me his name, but, you know, hotel lobby with so many people, so many things going on. So I can't help you. But hopefully this guy will watch this show and write to you or call you. He should tell you that he was a guy.
Yeah, he should. Definitely, man. Reach out, see what's up. But it's been a great episode.
It's been fun.
Yeah, and we look forward to having you guys all next episode.
But you know what I'm looking forward to next now, like in a moment.
Yeah.
You said there is bitter leaf soup and there is a good single malt whiskey.
Yes.
Bring it on, man.
Yes, that's the next thing. I doubt, but I'm going to have to taste it and see if it's the real one.
Yeah.
Or if it's half wheat.
Well, you said you'll forgive Anambra people. Anambra people are not known for making great... I brought Emeka. There's this great delicacy which people from his area of Iboland are experts in making. So somebody from my area of Iboland made some. I think it stands up.
Okay.
You know. We'll
find out.
So if it doesn't, please forgive us.
We'll find out. All right. So we'll see you guys next episode. Hope you guys enjoy. Let us know what you like, what you want to hear about, what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
Your comments.
Thank you very, very much. It's been such a delight. It's been quite a while. And I let Emeka carry the burden. You did some interviews alone when I was in Nigeria, but thank you very much for undertaking to do those. Connectivity was too unreliable for me to join those episodes. So I want to, again, apologize to those who were our guests that I wasn't there, but Emeka did a terrific job and I'm proud that you represented both of us.
Yeah, definitely catch those episodes, man. Great stuff. We had a couple of great guests. Yes. Had a lot to say. So,
thanks, guys.
All right.
Yeah. Now you may press.